people who are my age and younger, and some of you older baby boomers as well, have a knee-jerk reaction to the word authority, and with good reason. Part of that is a result of the liberation movements of the 1960s and 1970s. Women's liberation, gay liberation, black power, the anti-war movement. It was the era of flower children and the counterculture. So it was like really beautiful that you sang that song this morning, Bill. Thank you. And though there are certainly enduring legacies of that era, the people who populated those movements tended to become, how shall I say, yuppies, who cared more for their brokerage accounts than for free love or preserving the planet or working for peace. And please remember that there is still a lot of work yet to be done in this nation, where women still earn only 82 cents on the dollar compared to their male counterparts in the same jobs. Some things have changed, to be sure, but we're being forced by the political realities in which we live to look at what is ultimately most important. Having been sexually harassed by a female superior in a position of authority when I was working at Stanford University in my 20s, I can, in some ways, though certainly not always, understand what the abuse of power and authority looks like and feels like. But what about authority, legitimate authority that's used creatively and responsibly? You know, when Jesus walked into the synagogue, he didn't have a whole lot of rabbinic authority. It would be sort of like somebody walking in the back door of Plymouth and coming up forward and saying, I think I will preach this morning. So if any of you want to do that, we can tag team. Jesus' sense of authority was not power to enforce obedience or compliance, but rather power to influence the beliefs, the actions, and the lives of the people who heard him. His hearers they afforded him authority because of his abilities, because of the way he healed, because of the subversive wisdom that he proclaimed. And even though you may think that one of the hallmarks of the feminist movement is opposing authority in all its forms, some feminist philosophers are beginning to shift that idea. Rebecca Hanrahan and Louise Anthony write that feminism is an anti-authoritarian movement that has sought to unmask many traditional authorities as ungrounded. Given this, it might seem that feminists are required to abandon the concept of authority altogether. But the exercise of authority, they write, enables us to coordinate our efforts to achieve larger social goods and hence should be preserved. Instead, they say, what is needed and what we provide for here is a way to distinguish legitimate authority from objectionable authoritarianism. Say that 10 times fast. And God knows we are hearing a whole lot of objectionable authoritarianism these days, if not downright fascism. And it's coming from certain corners in the American political arena, and it's fueled in part by Christian nationalism. And still, I think there needs to be a dialogue between freedom and authority. We need to examine to whom or to what in our own lives we give authority, what we pledge our allegiance to, and whether that's legitimate or whether it's not. And if we find that our prior assumptions about the sources of authority kind of miss the mark, we need to make adjustments. We all afford or give over some of our authority to people or to forces in this world. And it's time for some deep reappraisal. I'm going to cough.
Sorry about that.
got a little cold this morning, and I'll be masking and gelling before communion, don't worry. So let me pose an ethical question for you to consider. What is the dominant influence in your decision-making? How about your political persuasion? Is that what's the dominating influence? Or is it your socioeconomic class, or your race, or your gender, your relative affluence, your sexual orientation, your economic self-interest, your role as a parent or as a child, your sense of pleasure? Or is it your sense of faith? Let me come at this from a slightly different angle. In whom do you put your ultimate trust? I mean, when push comes to shove, where do you assign trust, if you can trust anybody? Is it your doctor, your stockbroker, your therapist, your personal trainer, your yoga instructor, your employer, your spouse, or your partner? And when you are on your deathbed, who do you want to be there? Do you want God to be there, or would you rather see Jerome Powell there? Let me ask the question yet a third way. Whom do you serve? Whom do you serve? Is it the balance on your city card? Is it your kids' activities and chauffeuring them around town? Is it your student loan debt? Is it your employer? Is it your family? Is it yourself? Is it your God? All of these questions point toward the A word, authority. So who or what is authoritative in your life? And I know a lot of us would quip, it's the economy, stupid. But there's nothing in this or any economy that's going to help you lead a truly good and meaningful life and keep you from death and lead you from life into life beyond death. If we don't give authority to God, then we wind up giving it to a range of petty deities in our culture. You know, the anti-institutional thrust of the 60s and 70s taught us to trust no one, especially if they were over 30 or in a position of authority. And so we find our nation in a state of really radicalized individualism, caring little for the common good at times or for the larger consequences. But I think and I hope that it's changing. It's beginning to change. The pendulum, at least for some of us, has begun to swing in the direction of collective responsibility. What is this? A new teaching with authority? You and I have a lot of advantages in considering the questions that I've posed. We're part of a 400-year-old religious tradition that has diminished the human authority of bishops and popes and kings and put authority back where it belongs, with God. You know, it isn't then that Marta and I don't have pastoral authority. We do, and you've entrusted that authority to us, never to be abused. But we firmly believe that we are not gatekeepers who come between you and God. We can, however, coach you from the sidelines. You have direct access to that source of ultimate authority. One of the great Christian ethicists of the 20th century, H. Richard Niebuhr, wrote, "To make our decisions in faith is to make them in view of the fact that the world of culture, human achievement, exists within the world of God's grace, God's kingdom." That bears repeating. To make our decisions in faith is to make them in view of the fact that the world of culture, human achievement, exists within the world of grace, God's kingdom or realm. So if Niebuhr is correct, everything that we do, that we say, that we think, that we act, that we feel, that we own, that we profess is done within the context of God's reign. And God's kingdom is an anti-imperial reign in which the first shall be last and the last shall be first, where faith the size of a mustard seed will burst into an enormous size, where the rich shall be sent away empty because they've had their consolation. Now, this may scare a few people away from a new members class at Plymouth, but our membership covenant contains these words: I give myself unreservedly to God's service. How many of you here have entered that covenant as members of this congregation? Raise your hands. Okay, a lot of us have done that. When each of us who are members of this particular congregation entered that covenant, we made a solemn vow to place ourselves under the authority of God with nothing held back. So how are you doing with that? None of us does it perfectly. I certainly don't. God is ultimately in charge, whether we acknowledge it or whether we don't. And when we covenant to give ourselves unreservedly to God's service, we're saying explicitly whose authority we are under. We find ourselves at the beginning of an election year, as well as in a time of national political crisis, exacerbated by the gift of social media and of the 24-hour news cycle. And it's precisely at such a time as this that it's good to have a sense of clarity that we are God's people. And nothing can separate us from the love of God. So here's where the profound dialogue between authority and liberation meet. When we give ourselves fully to God, and I can only recall a small handful of human beings I know of who have ever done that completely, we free ourselves from every other master, powers and princes, presidents, success, wealth, fame, longevity, even student loan debt. Aren't you ready for that kind of liberation? When we share Holy Communion, we feast at God's table. And in a very tangible way, we acknowledge that we are utterly dependent on God for everything that keeps us alive, body and soul. So every time we celebrate communion, every time you come forward to receive the elements of bread and wine, I invite you to think carefully about whom you serve and what ultimate authority you recognize in your life. May we be grounded in God's grace and in God's love. Amen.